Hi, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. I am Graham Couch of the LSJ, here with my colleague Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press, and we're going to talk some MSU basketball on this Big Ten tournament week, beginning of the postseason, as Michigan State, I think they're probably in the tournament if you just look at every metric out there. But if they don't beat Minnesota on Thursday in their first game of the Big Ten tournament, I don't know about you, Chris, but I think we'll all have a keen eye Sunday night just to make sure, and I think they'll be sweating a little bit.
Yeah, and depending on what happens Thursday against Minnesota, I mean, who knows? I mean, that could be if a loss could push them out, a loss could push them to Dayton. The crazy factors going around the country, too. I mean, I asked Tom Izzo today, I said, or on Tuesday, is all this in, you know, going on in college basketball the result of parity, or is it the result of mediocrity? And he didn't have a really good answer for it, because that's where we're at. I mean, there's so many factors between, I think, the transfer portal, you know, the COVID year guys, and so many things that have disrupted the norms of chemistry within the college basketball world. That even things like, you know, the last five games that Michigan State's played, they've given up 66 points and they've gone 1-5, 1-4. I mean, some things are just defying logic right now in terms of the norms of the numbers and everything. And some of that has to do, I think, with some of the experience level of some of these teams. Some of it has to do with the mediocrity of inability of some teams like Michigan State to close some games out. So, it is going to be a fascinating Selection Sunday. Maybe, I mean, up until this point, I think probably the 2021 year was the closest to the cut line that Michigan State was at. And I think this is probably in that ballpark with a loss.
I would say closer than this was 2016-17. The Miles Bridges, Nick Ward, Cassius Winston freshman year, they had to go beat Penn State. And I think they all felt like they had to win that game at the Big Ten tournament. And this is like, what's interesting about this is you look at them at 18-13, 10-10 in the Big Ten, and you know, a lot of the teams they played are punching their tickets to the NCAA tournament, like Oakland just did, and James Madison, and we'll see what happens with Indiana State. And then there's good wins against Illinois and Baylor that a lot of teams don't have. But you look at them, watch them play sometimes, and you go, I don't know if they deserve it. The thing is, you look at the metrics and you look at other teams' resumes, and it's just hard to find how they don't get in. I think the one thing that would be interesting is if they don't get in and their net is 25-ish right now, if their net ranking is only like 27, I don't think it'd fall much below that, and they don't get in, I don't know that people use the net anymore. So, like, I don't know that I don't think that's going to happen.
I think they're 19 in KenPom going into Tuesday, yeah, and 21 in Bartorvik. I mean,
predictive metrics love them, no doubt.
You still look at what happens on the court, and you're looking at a lot of the same issues that have been issues all year. I mean, at one point or another, in that Indiana game, they really came back. I mean, I think they're in solidly had they beaten Indiana. I think there's no question about that. I don't think you have to worry about it, but I do think that a loss to Minnesota right now could bite you. I mean, you know, there's some teams that are looking to maybe steal some bids from the Big Ten. I think the projections I've seen had maybe five teams getting in.
Yeah, you don't want to lose to Minnesota, because you just don't want to. I think if you don't beat Minnesota, you've sort of left it in somebody else's hands.
Yeah, Minnesota's 86th in the net right now.
Yeah, no, they're an 18-13 team, same record, but very different because of the schedule they played and some of the teams they've lost to, you know, and don't get me wrong, I think Minnesota played their season right given where the program was before this. Like, I think playing an easy schedule made sense. But they're not. Minnesota, for example, would need to beat Michigan State and beat Purdue just to start to creep into the conversation, I think, for the NCAA tournament. So they're a ways off the bubble right now, even with the same overall record in certain ways.
But they've also got the tournament at home for the first time. Not on their home gym, but in their home city. I mean,
and what does that sound like? It's a good question. And sometimes it's a big home court advantage. Other times it doesn't feel as much. I mean, I remember in D.C., Maryland, and not seeing like they had much of a home court advantage, you know. So it's hard to tell sometimes going in what it's going to feel like, and because of the way they distribute the tickets and all that stuff.
Noon on a Thursday also maybe benefits Michigan State a little bit too. But then again, Indiana being on spring break, you thought that might have benefited them too, and it didn't.
Well, it did in certain ways. I mean, Tyson Walker hits that shot. We're having different conversations, and they did come back from down 24-7 and took a 7-point lead. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Michigan State that's weird is and this is what I really want to get into is this notion. Like, a lot of people are frustrated. They're frustrated by the season that didn't live up to expectations. They're frustrated by the lack of quality at the center position this season. They're frustrated by how things have gone. A team that they thought was going to be back where Michigan State was at the end of the Cassius Winston era is not lived up to that. But Izzo has insisted throughout this late season that, you know, they may still have a run in them. And Malik Hall, talking today, had a number of interesting things to say. And you're writing about this that should be up tomorrow, you know, just about some of the pressure they've dealt with and all that. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there. But also, that anything can happen here, and that this is still a team that could make a Final Four run, and they feel that. The question is, how much do they believe it, and how much do we believe that they actually have anything like that in them?
Well, I think the biggest pressure point that everybody knows, but nobody really wants to say, is that 25 straight NCAA tournament streak. I mean, Malik, you know, you asked him about it. He said, we got to handle it. Pressure makes diamonds or it bursts pipes, which I think was a fascinating way to look at it. But, you know, he had a real mature response to, you know, describing what the pressure is and how this program has always been built on pressure, you know. And we had a really good conversation about it. I mean, the pressure is always there, you know, whether it be his freshman year and there was pressure to try and win the Big Ten championship that they got a share of down the stretch, or, you know, the years where you have the pressure to try and get a one seed, or the last couple of years where the pressure is just to get into the field. I mean, there's always pressure. That's how Tom Izzo likes it. But he also said the other day and Sunday night that he doesn't want to put pressure on his group because he's worried about the mental aspect of what it might do. But the guys, you know, both Jaden Akins and Malik Hall said, that's what this program is. This program is that pressure, and we know it, and we, you know, they come in expecting it, but this is a different, when you're talking about ending a streak, nobody wants their legacy to be that.
No, and I guess the question is, you know, I mean, I think they're probably already in the tournament, and I think they'll beat Minnesota. Doesn't mean they will, but I think when they're full strength, they're a better team than Minnesota, and I think they would have won at Williams Arena had Tyson Walker not crumpled to the floor, aggravating that groin injury, and they sort of fell apart for the next few minutes.
But probably doesn't get you in the tournament, and it makes for a very uncomfortable Sunday or however long it's going to be. You got to wait. If you lose in Minneapolis and you got to come back and watch the rest of the conference tournaments, I mean, that will be a very uncomfortable wait. Maybe the most uncomfortable of the last 25 years.
100%. But the question is, is this team capable of the high-end stuff? And, you know, it's interesting talking to I asked Tall about today, asked Malik about the idea of, you know, 2 years ago, they went on that run at the Big Ten tournament where they won a couple games, beat a seed that was higher than them in Wisconsin, and then gave Purdue fits in the semifinals, and then looked okay in the NCAA tournament. You know, we're up on Duke late, and then last year they lay a dud against Ohio State, and then play really well in the NCAA tournament. And is there any way to benefit to the Big Ten? Are these just two different animals? And, you know, he said for different teams it can be different value, right? 2 years ago, I think they needed a little bit of confidence, and they found it, and they found some game in there, and A.J. Hogard played really well in that tournament. And then it kind of continued over, and last year it was a team that maybe needed a little bit of a kick in the pants, and was that Ohio State loss did it. This year's team, you know, I think we know they can't just turn it on. I do think getting some guys shooting well and playing well and hot and feeling like they can take somebody out would be interesting. I do think there's value in, like, the Purdue game, if they get there, would be interesting, Chris, because, like, it's not just, you know, where is Purdue's head going to be this week? I don't know. We just saw Ohio State in the women's bracket was the best team in the Big Ten check out quickly. Indiana did, and I don't think they checked out intentionally, but all the pressure on Purdue, they've already won the Big Ten, is on this NCAA tournament. Do they want to play three games in 3 days before this? I don't know.
Yeah.
They play, you know, they play their point guard like 40 minutes a game. Do they want to put that on him?
MSU gave them fits. MSU gave them fits on their home court. Yeah. I mean,
they may not want to be there.
Yeah, and a noon game too. Again, you know, the oddity of a noon start time can work either way. I mean, you know, some teams show up unprepared for it and just kind of coast through it. Some teams that are desperate and hungry, and I think that's one of the things Jaden Akin said, is that this team needs to be hungry and need to show it. I mean, if you can't come out and be down 20-5 like you did at Indiana, if you are a hungry team. And I just don't know if this team has that one guy, that one player who shows that hunger at that level. I mean, Walker has been the closest thing to it. And we saw that maybe a little bit at Indiana for the first time in a month and a half, just from the health factor, and they need him at this point. But that's not going to get it done, just one guy. You need Hogarth and Akins to be playing and really Hall to elevate their desire level and their want to drive this team.
One thing that's interesting is, you know, and I don't mean that Purdue's going to come out and tank the game. That's not how this works.
Right.
Like the last time Michigan State sort of did this, it didn't work. They tried to check out. Like in 2019, Cassius Winston had played, just, you know, his legs were stubs. He'd been playing so hard. They'd won the Big Ten outright, and he did not want to be at that Big Ten tournament. And he played the worst game he'd played in quite a while against Ohio State. But freaking Foster Lawyer hit 4 3-pointers, and they beat Ohio State. Then they had to play a Wisconsin team they were a much better team then. So they win that game, and then it was Michigan in the championship. When you're there, you're going to play to win that.
That's the thing that we talked about. You know, if they don't have to play that game and they continue to play the way they had been, does how much of a difference does Kyle Arns make in that Final Four game against Texas Tech?
No doubt. And if you're Purdue, you don't want the ankle, you know, being turned. You don't want anything like that. You're okay. Like, if you're Purdue, it's not that you don't want to win it. You're okay if you go home. But from a Michigan State standpoint, what's interesting about that Purdue game is, if they get there, is the idea that, you know, if Michigan State's the type of team that's capable of making a run, and it's not entirely matchup dependent, because I do think there are certain two-seed types, Marquette again, things like that, that they can make a run against, but it's entirely matchup dependent. But Purdue is a great example because it's a bad matchup in certain ways, especially inside. It's a bad matchup for everybody with Purdue. But and it's the type of team that's going to be a one seed that Michigan State may have to face in the second round. And I would, you know, if I'm the selection committee or I'm a one seed and Michigan State somehow gets past Purdue, even if it's a Purdue team that's okay with that result, I wouldn't make Michigan State an 8 or 9 seed. Like, the question is how much would they have to do to get up on the 7 line? And the reason...
Yeah, but we also know that the Big Ten tournament historically holds very little relevance to bumping seeds that much.
It's not about Michigan State, and I know they probably wouldn't do this, but if you have a team that is capable of beating one seeds, like, and Michigan State shows it, it is unfair to the one seeds to put that team on the 8-9 line. You're better off putting them in a 10. Make them a 10 then. The team that's earned that seed all year, earned that right to have that spot, shouldn't have to face a team that's that capable, is what I'm saying. And so it would be interesting to see if Michigan State still wound up in an 8-9 after getting past Purdue, if they did so. And it would also be telling of a team that maybe could make a run. That's Friday's issue.
And the other thing to keep in mind is if they do get through Minnesota and face Purdue again, then they cannot face Purdue in the if they get into the NCAA tournament.
Which means they would not be going to Indianapolis.
Right. More than likely.
Yeah, yeah.
It also depends on what other pods there. But
Correct. If they were an 8-9 seed, especially. Right. They wouldn't be headed to Indianapolis, because you can start to figure that stuff out. So the question of whether this team can make a run, and I don't mean just this week, but overall, you know, I still think, like when you look at the Indiana game, there were some promising things in there. The biggest one, Chris, as you just alluded to, is Tyson Walker looking like the Tyson Walker from early January and before. Like, he's a guy that, you know, Tom Izzo would say he can take us places. That was the line I think he used. But that when I look at him for most of the season when he was hobbled, he was not. He was a good player. He was not a great player. He's still a diminutive guard, and that comes with some limitations here and there. They're going to need Jaden Akins to catch fire, I think, as well. But they're also going to have to find a big, I think, it gives them some consistency and plays pretty well. And I don't think they can, you know, keep this search for one of them to have a game. You know, they could use, and Cooper, I thought Cooper played okay defensively.
He got bullied down the stretch.
Yep. Yeah, he did. And Kohler was plus 11 in 14 minutes or something?
You know, in the limited glimpses we saw in practice last week, going into the Indiana game, I was not going to be shocked if Kohler started over Booker, but going back to Indiana, they opt for Booker, but out of halftime, they went with Kohler. So that's something to keep in mind for this tournament. You know, Kohler's minutes have gone up. They've given him some good end-of-game run the last couple games. Same with Cooper. We haven't seen much of Sissoko, and I don't think we saw Booker at all in the second half after he was on the floor for that big Indiana start.
So if they're going to make a run, the best chance they have to do so, Chris, I think, is to change a little bit of who they are offensively. And doing that is, you know, one of those centers. I've always said it's a race against time against Booker, because you get what you got against Indiana right after, you know, you've had some good games. And it's just hard to know if he'll, you know, he can hit some threes, he can give you some stuff. Kohler is giving you more and more, and I think he's a guy who can, you know, he just sees the floor the way the guards do, which I think is helpful for those guys. And Cooper is probably your best defensive option at this point, and yet guy who doesn't, I mean, he has some real limitations that he's aware of, but he doesn't limit you in some of the ways Sissoko does.
And then he had that ridiculous putback dunk after the missed walk.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's less about the limitations and more about the fact that those guys have upside. I mean, you see that each one of those young guys has some semblance of upside, but waiting for that to develop at this point,
you're out of time.
I mean, it's not going to happen. You know, it's just, you might catch lightning. You might catch a little bit of lightning if someone's not on a scouting report. But now, I mean, even a guy like, because I think about a couple years ago, was it Gabe Brown wasn't on a scouting report in that LSU game. And he had a big game from outside in that one in the tournament. But Booker's play down the stretch moving into the starting lineup is, and his pedigree as a prospect, he's going to be on people's front pages. And they're going to adjust. And that's something that, I mean, that's a sophomore kind of thing that you learn that even like Cooper's had to deal with it, but Kohler hasn't because he's only played a half season. But when teams adjust to you on their scouting report, how do you adjust your game? The second adjustments that, you know, a freshman can't make, but a sophomore can, that sometimes we don't really talk a lot about.
Well, maybe you're right. There's still things that I think Booker probably can do that other teams haven't seen on film or aren't worried about. It's not that they haven't seen it on film. They're just not that concerned. They're concerned about other parts. And Kohler probably has some of that too, because he hasn't had the game yet. Like, I kept thinking he was going to have a game where it kind of came together and he put together, you know, 10, 12 points and was hitting some more of his shots and found some confidence. And I think, you know, right now confidence is a big thing with him, and they need to kind of blow that into him. And because you have to become, if you're Izzo on this staff, you have to recognize that for all the grit you have, for all the moments you've shown, you're probably going to have to be more than you've been most of the season to do anything. Now, there's the flash at Baylor. There were moments where, you know, there have been moments, but you're probably going to need to be, and to be something else than you've been, it's not only going to take the best of Tyson Walker. It's not only going to take Jaden Akins coming out of a slump and Hall continuing to play aggressive, and I think Hall will. And, you know, Hogard to be sound and good, and those guys defensively have been great. But you're going to have to get something out of somebody else. And maybe it doesn't always have to be a big man. It could be a Trey Holloman game. You know, it could be. But you're going to need somebody to be not the primary fear factor of a scouting report, to be an X factor in a game that people don't necessarily expect. And it's going to have to be like a Big or a Holloman, I think.
One of the things that would be a great thing that isn't on scouting reports is Colin Carter be able to do one of two things: start hitting some jumpers or getting into the paint and drawing fouls and getting to the line. It doesn't always have to be a dunk. You know, you alter the game sometimes just getting to the line. He's got the athletic ability and strength to get through. We've seen him finish through contact when he attacks, not just looking for the highlight reel. So, but again, I don't know how much he's going to see the court with his defensive. There's an area of growth that he needs in the defensive side. And I think the same goes for Booker. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating. You're right, though. I think, you know, it's got to be one of those bigs. I mean, they've got to get, and it doesn't have to be a 10.8 rebound game. It has to be finishing the garbage chances that they get, which has been a struggle, getting the boards, which has gotten better, but then converting after you get them, or having that kickout pass to set something up rather than fumbling the ball away to the opponent. I mean, little things, you know, that Izzo was talking about those little things today, and it's doing the little things that I think this team can take that step. But again, the only thing that's been consistent about this team is its inconsistency all year.
The guy of the main core, I mean, obviously, we've seen a very good performance from Malik Hall for most of the last two months, and that matters. We've seen Walker elevate his game, and I do think he's a guy who can carry them for stretches. But the two guys who probably have more to give, and
more.
I think can be better complementary pieces than they've been are Akins and Hogard. And look, for all the stuff people say about AJ, he is still the guy who was the best player on the floor in the second half against Kansas State last year. You know, he is still a guy who is not scared of any situation, and he can play up pretty well. He's also a guy who can play down. Like, he is not going to automatically physically take over any matchup. He's not that kind of pro, but he's quick enough, big enough, physical enough that there is nobody he's going to run into who scares him. And then Akins, when he's hitting his shot and he's feeling good about himself, he is such a difference maker. And so they do have, you know, the old line is you got to have three guys rolling to get anywhere, right? And too often Michigan State just doesn't have that. And so it's not just that you got to have a big and you got to have all this stuff, but you got to have three guys going. And so who is that third guy going to be? Obviously, it's got to be Walker. It's probably got to be Hall. But it's got to be three of those four guys have to be going for this team to do anything. And that's been part of the problem this season is among their core four, very rarely have they had that sort of thing going for them.
Yeah, they had 57 of the 64 points at Indiana. But
they played well for the most part, those four. It wasn't their fault.
Yeah, the one thing I think people don't understand – I think, or want to, as much as people want to throw criticism at Hogard, I don't know if anybody last year benefit as much as he did from having Joey Hauser on the wing, because Hauser pulled away a big man and gave Hogard the opportunity to take smaller guards and post them up with it being the floor being spread away from him, and making some moves and the stuff that we haven't seen, you know, the stuff that he's done. He did in the NCAA tournament and in getting deep into the paint, making some mid-paint drives where he's getting into traffic and then finding a little hunt and peck hole to get to the rim. Like, he's quick like that. But when everything's congested in there with a big man that's just kind of lounging and lumbering and waiting just to crash the boards because they're not an offensive threat, that affects a guy like that. You know, what he does best, but he's also had enough shots at the rim that he's missed himself. So, as much as it's some of those other things causing some issues, some of it's himself. And he's got to be able to finish those shots again.
No doubt.
As much as they need Akins outside, they need Hogard getting some, because that is your paint scoring that you're missing from your big, for your five man.
Yeah, no, they need Hogard. I mean, Hogard was good against Indiana. What do you have, like 10 points, 6 assists, 4 steals, 1 turnover? Like, that's a good line. That's a good line.
He was 4-12. You know,
he's got to make more shots. You're right. And Izzo brought that up today because they don't have a great margin of error. The idea that, you know, the difference is making the free throw. It's making the bunnies. It's those sort of things, you know, because they're not going to overwhelm people. And so they have to make the critical points. What's also interesting about this team is how poor they've been. I think it was Eric Pratt, our friend, who tweeted out the Michigan State is 2-9 in games decided by 7 points or less this year, which after being very good in that stat in recent years, and it feels like it when you watch these games late. And what's interesting, and Izzo alluded
to, I believe it's 2-8 in Big Ten play.
Yeah, and Izzo alluded to that today because there aren't a lot of games you go, boy, they could have won that game, or they could have lost that game and won, and there are a lot of games they could have won and lost. But what's sort of interesting is it's not a matter of moxie or fear. I mean, it does become part of your DNA a little bit late, but because we've seen a lot of games in the middle of this Big Ten season where they were down at home in the second half and just found a gear and turned it, and under those pressure moments seemed fine, and then would take control of the game. In games they haven't had complete control of, they have really struggled down the stretch at times in late free throws, letting teams, late game situations. I think part of it is they don't have, other than Walker as a smaller guard, and you can take those guys away, a true go-to scorer. Like, Malik Hall's a really good player. He's not like a go-to dude. Jaden Akins is not consistent enough to create for his own go-to dude. Hogard does not finish well enough to be a go-to dude. So it's Walker, and Walker's small enough that he's got to hit a jump shot, and he's great in those situations, and if he's healthy, it makes him a lot better in those situations. But they don't have a pro to give him that, or a guy who's, they just don't have that guy.
They don't have a first-team All-Big Ten guy.
Well, they do when Walker's healthy.
When Walker's healthy.
And I think he is now.
But again, he hasn't been, and you've seen that. But even still, and again, I don't know how healthy he's been all year. I mean, there's been one thing after another. It was shin splints coming out into the season. It was a hip in December. It was the groin after January. So who knows how long and how much we've seen him healthy this year. But he was still averaging over 20 a game up until that Michigan game where Izzo came out of it and said that he was battling a groin injury.
And now, but you like when in the locker room the other day, I said, I know you don't talk about this, but he did talk about it finally, and he did. He said, "I am back." Like, he just said it the same way he said a year ago, after a big game early on, like, "This is who I am," and he was right. And so I have to take him at his word now after scoring 30 points in Indiana. And so if he is back.
That windmill dunk at the end of the Northwestern game was almost like a tipping of the hand, like, oh, okay, I'm doing better.
Yeah, no, right. Because we thought after the Northwestern game when he was missing shots that was still that might have just been an off night because he did rebound well. Because we thought that was still lingering, because he hadn't had as much lift. His shot had been – his three-point shot had been down 10 percentage points.
Yeah.
And it had a lot to do with it. So it was hard to know that he was back with that Northwestern game. So that is really good news for them. I look at that Indiana game, and I think they played – well enough in a lot of ways to win that game and just didn't. And Indiana's, star big man, the Ware kid, was incredible. And so I don't want to put too much on that. It's that they put themselves in that spot where that game mattered.
Yeah, but defensively they struggled. I mean, that was, all the bigs struggled against Ware. Renaud had his way in the first half. Mbako hit some big shots over guys. But I do think that, early on in that game with Booker on the court, they were getting killed on the boards. I mean, it was another one of those games where you saw that. And they settled in and they buckled down and started rebounding. Hall and Cooper had big games on the boards. But more importantly, Akins and Hogard combined for 9 boards. And Walker had 2. So that's 11 out of your guards. So if you're – and Kohler had 2. So – but if you're looking for additional rebounding – you need those guards and wings to crash. I mean, Jay Nakins, I thought, had some moments where he was, you know, as much as his struggles were there with shooting the ball, I mean, there were points where he was active and knocking the ball, getting up and knocking the ball out, grabbing some rebounds. And then I thought the sequence where they got him three shots, three outside shots in the same possession, to me, I mean, one, it was, I mean, that's crashing the offensive boards and something that they'd struggle with. And they were 12-12 on the offensive glass after getting 19 against Northwestern. That's a positive. That's a huge positive against a team that has a lot of bigs. But more importantly, the confidence that they showed in Akins to keep feeding him the ball was that, like, it was almost like, we want you to get this shot. Let's get you the shot.
Here's the thing. I do wonder if the Iowa and Ohio State games happened. So there's no way around that. I mean, they happened, and because they happened, Michigan State is in this spot.
Yeah.
But if they had taken care of business in those two games, I wonder how different. And let's not even say the Minnesota game, because that was a Walker injury. They played poorly, whatever.
And that was before that. That was before those two games, too. So
Right. But there are three games that you can look at and go, they really should have won, and would have been 13-7, and third place in the Big Ten and all that stuff. So I do wonder, like, if they're 12-8 and they've got 20 wins, people are still a little, you know, not feeling great about things. But I think people would feel more like this team might have a run in them. There's just been this compounded frustration, and a lot of it has to do with 4 years now of being this sort of team, a little bit worse, a little bit better, but you know what I mean, in this realm, not being a team that's competing for titles. It's sort of, I think it's with Izzo being defensive, and I mean, he comes out, and today I thought he was pretty good at his press conference. Like, he was, you know, he's aware, and he talks about, even today, you know, do what needs to be done. We'll start with this Wednesday. And when he says that, I'm reading code in that. He's not just talking about this run. He's talking about after this season.
Yeah.
He knows there are things that need to be done in his program. It's a big summer. I don't know whether that be within his staff, whether that would just be the roster. I mean, I think he understands that what is on the court is not enough. And then the other thing, I do believe that this – part of the reason they have to really look at things is they thought that this team would be enough. There was a miscalculation when you look at the quotes from last April, when the people I talked to in the summer, the way they were playing, and I think they really thought this would be all right. And there are some tricky dynamics when you have a guy like Xavier Booker coming in, and I don't know what was promised to him, but when you talk about the idea of, like, not bringing in a transfer big when you have a guy of that caliber as a recruit, that's an answer I don't have, but I do think when they evaluate this team this summer, and we'll have to see who stays, who goes, all that stuff, that there will be some changes in terms of that approach, and because they need to get bigger. It's not just and they need to get, you know, they don't necessarily have to get a five. They need to get a rugged rebounder. They might need to get bigger on the wing. You know, they need to develop some guys.
Yeah.
The Cohen Carrs of the world. You know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think they need, you know, what they're lacking in some ways are those 6'7" athletic wings that you see that Izzo's teams always had, the Gabe Brown type, right? I mean, whereas Malik is more of a low post guy, he's not the slasher that you need. You need some length, and Jay Nagin should be playing a two.
Yeah, they need, and I think Akins may be better at the two next year if that's where he winds up. And they need Carr to become that a little bit, but you know,
that's going to be an interesting thing, because I didn't see some of that coming with Akins and Hogard last year testing the draft waters. What that did to them this year, I don't know, because I mean, you could tell coming into the season that they were focused on showing some things that clearly they were told by scouts that they needed to improve and work on, and it didn't really work. And so you're going to go back and do it again?
No, I don't. I would be very surprised if Akins tests the NBA draft waters after this year. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, I wouldn't be stunned. I wouldn't be – the only guy I would be surprised – there are two guys on the team that I would be surprised if they left. And this is – no, three guys. I'll give you three guys. And this doesn't mean I think any of them are leaving. I'm just saying there are three guys that I would bet a lot of money aren't. One is Trey Holloman,
yep.
who I think feels like he's in a good place, really wants to be there. Another is Jeremy Fears Jr., who just did his whole rehab with MSU. Like, to me, after everything that's gone, I would be, who's sort of pegged to be the next guy, I'd be very surprised him. And then Carson Cooper, who they, you know, took a flyer on, has played a ton. I just think those three guys, I think you can say for sure. Nobody else, though, and I don't think Jaden Akins is leaving. I don't think Xavier Booker's leaving. I don't think Cohen Carr's leaving. But if you told me any of those guys were not back on next year's roster in this day and age, those are the type of guys in the future, in this day of the transfer portal, guys that people don't want to lose, that teams are always going to lose starting now. And that's just going to be the way it is, and people are going to have to get used to it. And somebody's going to go one of these years, and it may be this year, it may not, that people really don't want to go. And how quickly you can maneuver and react to that and bring somebody else in is going to determine how competitive you can be and how you sell these guys on things. Like, I don't think, like A.J. Hogard, I don't think is coming back. I don't know where he'll be next year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's playing point guard for another college team.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of final year COVID guys that are going to be in that boat around the country,
yes.
not just.
And maybe you bring one of those guys in from somewhere else and who's looking for a different spot, not at point guard, but. I don't think Sissoko will be back in any way, but that one would be, I would say, there's still a 15-20% chance that he returns, understanding he wouldn't be in a featured role, you know, just because he likes it and he doesn't want to go in, and this is his place in the world. And so I could see that in some capacity, but I really don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe his development would benefit from having a year of not having to worry about playing 18, 20, 25 minutes a game and just focusing on the smaller segments.
I don't know. I think he's developed. I think he is what he is. And unfortunately, because I don't know that. I just don't know that. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and listen. I mean, I think the kid didn't have a traditional basketball upbringing. So I mean, like there's raw skills that you still see.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, and I've covered some of these kids before. I covered a kid at Western who was, you know, he comes in sort of some of that type of background, and so there's this wonder about the upside, right? And then sometimes it happens, and sometimes it doesn't, and it's like they just turn out to be just not having that much, you know. There's a coordination level that things don't work out, but you know, and obviously, so those guys are probably gone. You know who's coming in as freshmen. But you also now have had a pretty good look at how much you can rely on freshmen. I think Garrick Norman will be interesting to watch. I you know, he is one of those guys that I think will be back, but he's a long way from home, and I don't know how he feels about everything. But he could be a real help to next year's team. Had a whole year to redshirt, a shooter, guy in the wing. You know, so there are guys, not even, it's sort of a bonus freshman with him if you can make sure he's part of next year's roster. And so, but you're gonna have to get. You're going to have to be a better rebounding team. You're going to have to be able to wall up better against bigs. And maybe a guy like the steps that Xavier Booker takes. I'm not convinced still that Booker isn't best at the five and that's not just what you want to focus on. And what you really want to get is a rugged rebounder out there who can play the four or the five and start or come off the bench and just add some stuff to you. But I don't know. It's a really interesting offseason.
Yeah, I think McCullough coming in kind of fits that profile of a, you know, Julius Marble, Andre Hudson type rebounder.
But freshman, though.
But a freshman, yeah. I mean, so.
Right.
And as we've seen right now, and I think the pendulum swing is also going to be interesting once the COVID, the fifth year, sixth year COVID guys who are 23, 24 start disappearing. How much more are you going to need those freshmen to come in and play those minutes, and how much more of an impact can they make when they're not having to go against grown men? I mean, there's a lot. I think there's so many things that have, and this isn't just a Michigan State issue. I think this is around the country. This is goes back to what I said earlier. I mean, how much of this is parity and how much of this is mediocrity? Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, what makes it the hard call, because you've got guys moving around all the time, so you don't know, you don't have the muscle memory of playing with a lot of different guys, which you see develop sometimes, like the Purdue class. Purdue senior class has played together for 4 years, and they've got muscle memory of knowledge and knowing how and where a guy is going to be. And it doesn't hurt that you're throwing a ball to a 7-4 guy that nobody can cover. But you got all these other little tangible, intangible things that kind of are there that develop with the sweat equity in practice. That,
oh, good word.
And that's just for you. But you don't have that developing over 4 years. You got to try and cram that in sometimes now with a guy who comes in as a sophomore and then maybe hits the draft, or comes in as a fifth year senior or a fourth year senior out of eligibility somewhere else. I mean, there's a lot of factors, I think, that have changed what makes a good college basketball team a good college basketball team. And until that, when that COVID year goes away, like I said, I think there's going to be another swing back, and then we're going to end up back in the one and done freshman type year. Who knows?
Well, and so maybe you take advantage of you got one more year to grab those type of kids out of the portal too, right? So that might be an advantage if you're looking for a 1 year guy a year from now. Yeah, that's the other thing that's tricky, talked about this more in football, but how quickly you have to identify the kids you want and recruit them and make decisions. And this comes in the, you have to know what your own kids are thinking. It's a tricky spot. And then, and then you could lose your own kid if they don't like what you're doing. It's not easy to do. It's just something that has to be done at times.
This time of the year right now, in the middle of March, coaches are worried about trying to make a tournament, trying to make, whatever it is, make a run in their league tournament, get into the NCAAs. But you also got to keep an eye out now because agents and handlers are starting to shop kids for next year.
100%. And people are starting to call about kids. And, you know, the other thing is, I think if you're building a staff these days, you ought to have somebody on staff who really is, doing less coaching and more, roster management, portal type, putting together a roster, a free agent, possible guys you want to go after. And so you're ready for that as guys become available, as guys enter the portal or say they're going to enter the portal now. You can't talk to kids yet, technically, but kids are declaring that they intend to be in the portal already, so you can get a sense of that, and you might know kids around the country who you think would be in, and that's just going to be part of the programs that are going to do this well are going to be the ones that really do evaluations on kids quickly and have done them ahead of time, and we'll see whether Michigan State is one of those. They have some advantages with NIL and Izzo and other things right now.
Yeah, it's a shame that the NCAA didn't have an opportunity to shut down for a year to figure out all these things. Oh, it did, but it chased the money. We talked about that back then. I said this is a great opportunity with NIL coming to figure out some of these issues that now you got to do it on the fly. Now you got Congress involved in some of them. So what we're seeing today could very well change again tomorrow because that's all it is right now. It's a constant and perpetual change. And I think Nick Saban went and talked to congressional leaders on Tuesday and said that it's unrecognizable. College sports is what he did for his entirety. So you're seeing some of those legendary coaches get out. And we've had this discussion too. What are we covering? We don't know sometimes either.
The problem is this. The problem is this, though. The coaches are the wrong vessels for this. Nick Saban, nobody wants to hear from his, I made $11 million a year, but about what the players, who they are now. And it's not that he's wrong. Izzo's not wrong when he talks about it. It's that the immediate reaction is eye roll, not these guys. What you need is you need guys who are players now. You need athletes. You need the Malik Halls of the world in Congress saying, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, the locker room is different. What guys care about is how much money they're going to make. Guys care about this. I'm not saying that's Michigan State's locker room, but if you want credibility with the public right now and this, that there are problems with some of the system, and I don't know that there entirely are, it just can't come from the dudes making a lot of money, because even if they're correct, people don't want to hear it. I also think the one thing that's going to change, within a year, I would be surprised if, I don't know if everybody will be employees within a year, but I would be surprised that we don't know it's about to be the case. It's really quickly, it's going to change the landscape.
Tony Petitti was talking about that a couple months ago when he got hired.
Yeah, there could be a lot of sports that disappear. How you fund like men's tennis? I mean, that could be a non-scholarship sport pretty fast and things like that, because schools just aren't going to be able to afford that stuff.
That's a sneaky little thing, non-scholarship. I mean, we've seen that at the high school level for, and I was thinking about this recently, how much high school sports have gone from, you know, being funded by the schools to being funded by the parents. And then what, James's? You know, I mean, does that fall under the athletic department auspices anymore? No. Is that rec sports? Who knows? I mean, and, you know, that's, it's going to be, I mean, that's the thing, is there's changes that have happened in such dramatic and quick fashion that, you know, the entirety of the industry wasn't prepared for it. And then you add into it the fact that they've sold their souls to the television networks for the big money. You know, all these things play. You can't go up on Capitol Hill and start complaining about having to pay athletes when you're reaping in a $1 billion plus in television money like you're the NFL in an antitrust exemption.
And nobody wants to hear it from them, because for years – you put kids on probation and programs on probation for minor things that ethically weren't wrong. This is my huge problem. I remember when people used to say, what do you think about this program cheating and this program cheating in like 2014, 15? You should do a column on this. I didn't think it was wrong. I didn't think it was morally wrong. Like, at heaven's door, some of the stuff that was being called cheating, some was because it wasn't even the playing field, but some of it was just crap from the NCAA, this sort of high and mighty, you know, we take the money, you play for free. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying a college scholarship is nothing. And we all liked the way it was as fans. Yeah. And maybe it can't exist at all in this new world to the point that everybody enjoys it.
I've always said this about that, is every rule on the book in the NCAA, and why the rule book in the NCAA got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, is because every one of these programs, in some way or another, at some point or another, stretched those rules to the point where the rest of the membership was like, that's not right. And that's, I mean, and that's the reality. College athletics and college coaches live in the gray area. And they've lived in the gray area for many, 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 many years, you know, and that's why the rule book keeps getting bigger. That's why all these things, that's why, you know, forcing them to open Pandora's box in NIL should have, Izzo loves to talk about the unintended consequences. You study the history of college sports, they were paying athletes back in the late 1800s. If you didn't think it was the NIL was going to turn into pay for play, then you went into this with a Pollyannish approach or an uneducated approach of knowing just how and what the booster element would do for the love of alma mater, for wins.
Where they screwed up and didn't need to screw up was, in NIL would be different to some extent, is if they just not changed the one-time transfer rule. Didn't have to do it, weren't going to get sued for it. The thing they might have had to do was go to college volleyball and the sports like that where you can transfer immediately and say you can no longer transfer immediately, but and play immediately, but that was that combination that did it. And if they had just made the transfer portal can exist, all that can exist. You have to sit. It's not a punishment to sit out. It's just not, to get an extra free year of school. It's to get all the swag they do, to live on campus away there. It's not a punishment. It would have been better for the kids. Would have been better off. The whole system would be working a little bit better, and we'd have a better chance to get our hands around it if they had just not done that. And they didn't have to do it. And that to me was the big mistake.
To a certain extent. But NIL was never meant to be a collective situation where boosters were paying for these kids. I mean, let's face it, the NIL structure was always based around the name, image, and likeness of that O'Bannon case that goes back to the video games, that goes back to the jersey sales, all the things at that point that were there. But it's been, like many things over the course of the history of college sports, it's been, you know, twisted and perverted to based upon the boosters wanting to basically run their college like a professional team.
Well, they want to win. Their guys want to win.
We're on the precipice of that. We're on the precipice of this being minor league sports. And, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe this is the last real NCAA tournament experience that we're about to go into here this month. And it's going to change dramatically, short order.
It could ruin it to the point that it doesn't, it's not recognizable, and that 20 years from now, we don't care about this stuff. Like, I already hear from people all the time. They're going to care about MSU. They're going to root for MSU. They love an MSU team. They don't root for the Big Ten, which looks like a bully right now. They don't like what's happening in college sports. And so, and there are a lot of fan bases where the dream is being killed. I'm telling you right now, there's a real danger. They kill this golden goose. And it's going to be fascinating, Chris. You're right. But
yeah,
for right now, we do have an NCAA tournament. We have a Big Ten tournament. We have something that you know, resembles something that's familiar. And we have a Michigan State team that's still alive with the chance to do something. I don't know what. So what is your prediction for how far they'll go in this Big Ten tournament? Do they beat Minnesota, lose to Purdue? What is your prediction?
Honestly, I mean, you know, that first Minnesota game at Breslin was a close game until Walker took over down the stretch. And, you know, I think they won by 10, maybe 11 in that game. And they had the lead at the barn. They lost it and didn't score a lot of points, struggled to shoot. I mean, you know, the issues that you keep thinking are corrected, you know, whether it be a long stretch of hitting from outside, then falling into a funk again, or, you know, having a number of great starts, having that Baylor start or some of the other starts, and then you have that clunker in this the Sunday game against Indiana. It's hard to tell. I mean, I haven't been able to. I think would probably agree with this, is trying to pinpoint how and why things are happening, when they happen and why they happen, is just really difficult with this group. But I do think that there's a hunger factor that, if you don't have it against this Minnesota team, this is a tough team. This is a team that plays you tough, that is going to give you 40 minutes of maybe not the you know, old 40 minutes of hell, but they're going to make things difficult for you. They were one of the most physical teams all year in both meetings with Tyson Walker. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, if Walker's playing like he did on Sunday, I think Michigan State can win this game. But I'm hard pressed to make a projection on this one. But they know their backs are against the wall, and seems like this year, when they've realized the backs are against the wall, they've found that level of desperation. Can they do it again for about the umpteenth time? I don't know.
So I don't think Sunday was a clunker. I think they missed a shot at the end. I think they screwed some things up, but I don't think Sunday was a clunker, and I think that's the positive thing for them. I think Indiana played really well. The way they're playing, they'd be a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament.
The start was the clunker.
Yeah. And so I think they're, you know, they're in an okay place. I do think they'll beat Minnesota. I agree with the backs against the wall. I think the problem then is there is a little bit of an exhale when you know you're in, and this team will feel like they know they're in. Purdue is just better. And for all the stuff I said earlier about Purdue maybe taking their foot off the pedal or not caring as much about a deep run in this postseason, I think Purdue is better. I think Purdue will win that game. And I think Michigan State will be a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. But I think they beat Minnesota in a game that's, you know, not comfortable, but doesn't come down to the last shot. And then they lose to Purdue in a game that's relatively competitive, but Purdue's just better. And then they're a 9. And from there, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, that then we'll do that podcast next week, Chris. So,
yeah. If you let's put it this way, if you get another podcast from us this week, that means that Michigan State lost the first game.
Lost quickly, that's for sure. Well, we will have complete coverage. Both of us will be in Minnesota. You can read us at freep.com, at lsj.com, greenandwhite.com, and we will be back next week with another podcast after Selection Sunday. Please rate, subscribe, throw fruit, say whatever you want. Just give us 5 stars, and we appreciate you listening. This has been a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. Thanks for listening to Spartan Speak.